Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Extra Time. Nothing presented. We are just Extra Time, pure and simple, as we explained to you last show. I am David Goss because I have a voice. Andrew Wiebe, once again, out, voiceless, which is shocking when you look at his Twitter feed. So I wouldn't say opinionless, but he is still voiceless, still sick. But I've got Tom and I've got Matt here with me, getting ready to dig into everything. Transfer deadline day coming up in 2 days. So this is Tom Boger right now. He's in his... He's in his wheelhouse. He's ready to rock. And I know Doyle's got Sky Sports on 24/7, ready to just consume all transfer drama. Doyle, what's your favorite cliche of transfer period?
Here we go.
Oh, wow.
I keep trying to convince Tom that to get his own tagline. Like, ever since the Charlie Kennan thing, We Move has been out there just waiting for someone to start using that as their tag on any tweet. So I think that Tom should absolutely appropriate We Move and make it his version of Here We Go. And I just want to be like, on a serious note, transfer deadline day in most countries in Europe is 2 days from now, right? Like, it's a week later in Turkey.
Don't worry. We're going to get Greece. Tom to lay this all out for us.
We've got that.
Yeah, we've got the crib.
You're taking
notes
shots
coming
at me. Now you're coming onto the territory of I'm supposed to explain.
Taking shots at you,
Doyle?
Are you like a schoolyard bully? You're starting off these shows like, all right, let me throw a few elbows, see what I can get away with. Just you know, the refs can't call everything if I come
I
in with thousands.
I thought I was giving you sage brand advice.
Yeah, I would align myself
throwing
with
your
fake
profile.
Listen, ball players in my day, you threw an elbow on national TV, you never had to do it again. That was my version of being an oldie guy.
I go into the post at Tom and I'm screaming barbecue chicken in the post right here. Give me the ball.
Mouse in the house. Listen, Tom, I'll be the first to say it. You start to throw your branding on coasters. We're talking koozies.
Keychains.
We're talking keychains. I love a keychain. I actually got one at the last World Cup, the Men's World Cup in Russia, and it broke. It was not very reliable. Spoilers. Low quality stuff coming out of free giveaways at the Men's World Cup of Russia, which is a curveball after all we've learned. So I need a keychain. So Tom, you throw that branding on there.
A keychain bottle opener, right?
I don't need a bottle. Doyle, I opened the one bottle with my eye socket. I'm an eye socket guy, obviously. I do not open one bottle with the second bottle. So if there's just two bottles, I always will tell people, we could share one if you want, because I don't know how to open the last one if there's not a top on one of the other bottles. But that's my experience. That's, you know, a learning experience. So if anyone has any advice for me out there, feel free to send it to me. We will dig into this beloved transfer
deadline.
We are
absolutely flying out of the gates here. Like, this is careening off all the guardrails. This is something. This is good. This is a great start. I'm ready to go.
I think Anders is pretty excited about this episode overall. We haven't even gotten into the meat of it. Club World Cup is coming up. We are headed all mentally to Morocco. Seattle is headed there physically. For the first time ever, an MLS team competing in that competition after winning CCL last year. So we're going to talk about the format, potential opponents, expectations, and where the Sounders are sort of sitting right now coming in from preseason. And of course, USMNT played two of the most important games in history over the last week against Serbia and Colombia in LA. So we will break down everything we saw from the USMNT. It is a big week, though, in MLS circles. On Wednesday, this Wednesday, February 1st, the Apple Season Pass will officially launch. It's available in over 100 countries around the world. So if you're listening to this podcast, not in the US and Canada, you should go and check to see if you can get it as well. Every regular season match will be there. Every MLS playoff and MLS Cup match will be there. Every League's Cup match will be there. I made sure to stress that one in honor of Andrew Wiebe. No blackouts. And remember, if you're a season ticket holder, you'll automatically get a subscription. So look into that. If you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber, it's $12.99 a month or $79 for the season. If you're not an Apple TV Plus subscriber, $14.99 a month, $99 for the season. Rumors, though, coming out from Tom's camp that they're negotiating a different deal if you want to be a part of that. So negotiations are ongoing. I'm hearing rumors, potential designated player loans in, loans out. So that is exciting news. There'll be a ton of content in there the moment it comes out. I know myself and Andrew, as well as Edgar over at MLSsoccer.com, we did over 35 interviews, I believe, that will be up there from Media Marketing. Some really fun stuff, some really interesting stuff with a range of the big time players for this year that will be in MLS. So make sure to immediately jump on there on Wednesday and get locked in. Let's move to transfer deadline day now. Tom, before Doyle can jump in and steal your thunder, explain to me why I'm calling this specifically transfer deadline day, and explain to MLS fans what's going on and how this affects their club.
So transfer deadline day applies only to the buying club or the signing club. So in Europe, most of the deadline days for the winter transfer window is February 1st. It's 11 p.m. local time in England on the 31st. So, you know, 6 p.m. our time tomorrow. And that's a general good rule of thumb to follow, that most of these European nations, it's, you know, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, depending on when you're listening to this, at 6 p.m. Eastern here in the United States. And that only applies to teams in that region buying a player, because it's about transferring the ITC, the transfer certification, and you can only do that in designated windows. MLS clubs don't need to worry in terms of incomings, because MLS clubs can continue acquiring and registering players until, I believe it's April 24th this year is the deadline day. Regardless, it's into the spring. So this only applies to the acquiring team and that nation. And little one, like the Turkish League is open for another week. I believe it's the 8th of February. So that's a unique one. But for the most part, European transfer windows are closing Tuesday night.
What has your schedule been like this month, Tom? Like, when are you able to sleep? Yeah, not great.
Not great. I sleep when my eyes are burning from staring at my phone or computer too much. And I wish I was kidding.
Tom sleeps during the Fijian transfer window time period, as well as over, because Nicaragua stays open a week and a half longer as well. But if it's not those two time periods, then Tom's got to be awake and he's got to be pounding the pavement. Let's start digging in, because we've got a lot of news coming, potentially or not. As Tom said, it's the acquiring team that matters. So what we are primarily focused on is sales out of MLS into European clubs whose windows are going to be closing. Tom, let's start with probably the biggest name and what we think could be the biggest number out of this whole time period. It's in Cincinnati. It's Brenner. And now it's a connection to the Premier League.
Yeah, Nottingham Forest have made an offer to sign FC Cincinnati star forward Brenner. The offer was a loan with a purchase obligation. Cincinnati countered, and this was all kind of going on over the last few days. Talks continue to be ongoing. I've continued to hear more and more this morning. That's, you know, all the updates that are coming from through my Twitter, that Brenner decided not to train on Sunday. And then Monday morning, he had a talk with the coaching staff, and both parties agreed it didn't make sense for him to train with the group, as he hopes to push this move through. And as the group didn't, the coaching staff decided it wasn't worth it for a distraction for him to be training with the group. So right now, Nottingham Forest are trying to sign Brenner, and their talks are ongoing. And again, this has a deadline of 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Okay, lot to take in there, lot to talk about. We've talked about Brenner a couple times. Our understanding is this deal could be structured in different ways, which would affect FC Cincinnati in different ways. Doyle, I kind of came out when this first rumor hit, right before Christmas or after New Year's, whatever we base time on culturally, and said, I wouldn't sell because this is a guy who could push for Golden Boot. We were fifth place. We made it to conference semifinals last year. The team is built on the attacking front three and what they do. I also understand if he wants to go, there's a wall you hit up against. What do you make of FC Cincinnati if they were to lose Brenner this season?
They'd be fine. I think they would absolutely be fine. They were good at the start of last year. Because remember, Brenner wasn't the happiest camper in the world at the start of last season. And he wasn't necessarily a starter even until around June. Didn't score his first goal until mid-June. And obviously, as he raised his level, that helped the team quite a bit. But I think since he's one of the best teams, even without him, they have good depth at forward with Don Baggi and Sergio Santos. And I think if you get an eight-figure offer for a guy off of one good season, from a Premier League team. I just don't think that you're – I don't think Cincy's going to get better than this. So I would hope that they're able to find find a deal that works for all parties and then move on into the season. And the other thing to bear in mind here is Cincy's already made some really good deals under Chris Albright, right? They've shown the ability to find talent. So this isn't one of those situations where it's like, if the Galaxy sell Ricky Pudge, they're, you know, up the creek without a paddle, because they have not shown the ability to consistently recruit top talent or even not top talent. Like they tend to blow it. Whereas Cincinnati, real quick under Chris Albright, has been the opposite. So it just sounds like too good a deal for all sides not to get done. And you know, in Cincy's case, I'm sure they'll push it right to the deadline and try to squeeze as many concessions, as many potential, you know, sell on, or if he hits this number of minutes, they get an extra $500,000. Like, throw as many of those in there as you possibly can. But it's like, this is the, when you sign a player like Brenner, and granted they overpaid, but when you sign a player like Brenner, this is the type of, you want an EPL team to come in and make an eight-figure offer. Like, you got it, they'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the logical conclusion for me. But again, we'll see exactly what happens. Like, we've talked about this on the show that, you know, would it be better to have this player to have the money, you know, given their core and what they were able to achieve last year and the further continuity and higher expectations this year. But you kind of said it right there, Doyle. Like, the value probably isn't going up for Brenner. I believe he will, like, officially tip over the halfway point of his contract. And if he's unhappy, he's not going to discuss a new contract. And as contracts get closer to ending, the player becomes less and less valuable. Plus, who knows, you know, this is his dream. Like, he's made no, you know, internally and externally, he's made, you know, he hasn't hidden that. He was happy to come to Cincinnati, but it has always been with the idea to move on to Europe when the right opportunity presents itself. Last year, he kind of tried to push a move back to Brazil because he was unhappy. Cincinnati very smartly and correctly, in my opinion, said, you know, we're not accepting a free loan for you to go back to Brazil. We believe that you're going to look a lot better in Pat Noonan's system. You're going to play with Brandon Vasquez ahead of Lucho Acosta, you know, and the rest of the season, 18 goals, 6 assists. Like, it was a phenomenal season. Nottingham Forest are 13th in the Premier League. They've signed about, I don't know, 1,000 players over the last year. I think people have seen this club name a whole lot if you're just kind of passively following transfers. But look, they're looking to him as somebody that can help bolster their fight against relegation. They're 4 points above the drop zone right now. So it makes a lot of sense. I do know when Cincinnati were talking.
They have a big 6-pointer against Weston McKennie and Leeds coming up this weekend.
I do know that when Udinese made a bid for Brenner, that since he countered, you know, a sell-on percentage is non-negotiable. That's something that they need to have in this deal. And I'd imagine, like you said, doing maybe some add-ons. You know, we'll see where the talks go. But, you know, I'd imagine that this makes too much sense to not happen.
So, Tom, just because you were talking about the window, we talked about the window a minute ago. Does this moment, or does this timing hurt Cincinnati? Is it fine? Like, how do they react to the fact that they're selling him, or if they were to sell him or loan him, about replacing him? Or Doyle, in your mind, them being fine, is that related to replacing him? Or is that based on the roster that already exists?
I'll go first just for the information that I'm almost certain that you cannot sign a DP if he's still on loan. It doesn't matter if the loan purchase obligation is he plays one game. As long as he's on loan with the potential to come back, you can't add another DP because of the way that the transfer fee gets worked in. It's what happened with Inter Miami with Rodolfo Pizarro last year. It's what happened. It's what's happening right now with Ake Loba in Nashville. It's why Atlanta's pursuit of Giamakis has been so difficult, because the Marcelino Moreno is out on loan and they don't know if they'll be able to keep him on the budget as high TAM or as a DP spot. So I'm almost certain that Cincinnati would not be able to sign a DP until a permanent deal happens for Brenner. So essentially until the summer.
Yeah. And I think they would be fine anyway. But you know, I understand why there would be an urgency to get this done as a permanent deal if you're Cincinnati, because like, what if he steps off the bus going to training and turns his ankle and he never, you know, he doesn't get on the field and you can't, you know, you don't hit whatever triggers are necessary to make the loan permanent, and they decide, you know, they don't need him, what, you know, and then you're kind of, okay, we just gave away half our season with our DP center forward. But I just think the way that this team is constructed, and with the depth they already have at that spot, I think they're in a good position to ride it out. But I would understand completely if they were pushing to make it certain that this deal gets done as a permanent deal before the deadline.
The depth you're talking about is Sergio Santos, who they traded for from Philly last year, who had the assist on the game-winning goal against Red Bulls and obviously played for the Union off and on as a starter over the last few years. And then Dom Baggi, who began the year as a starter before, as you said, Brenner got comfortable, got healthy, got back into the team, whatever was going on with him. And obviously Brandon Vasquez was the leading goal scorer up until that point for the team. So they have both of them already. Which would you'd assume would be that cover. It's too bad this didn't happen like 4 months ago. They could have signed Luis Suarez. They could have been the MLS team that Luis Suarez was secretly negotiating with that we could never really figure out. That clearly wasn't the Galaxy as we go forward. Does any names pop in your head about replacements, though, as I say that tongue-in-cheek, whether in the league or outside?
So a detail that I'm glad that we're going back to this, it would have to be a young DP whenever they do get to replace him, because Wobodo and Lucho Acosta are senior players above the max TAM that occupy the other two DB spots. And they're using two U22 initiative slots. Absolutely. And I believe Isaac Katanga technically still counts because he's on loan. But regardless, it has to be a young DP if/when they replace Brenner.
So not Luis Suarez. You don't think he's a young DP. He's only 38. Maybe 39. Or they could trade inside the league, right? And go get someone that another team has that maybe they don't want. Doesn't seem like a position of depth across Major League Soccer. We threw some names together during the meeting. Tom, I think you maybe had the best one here. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I would love for Cincy to call the Galaxy and be like, how much would it cost for Dejan Jovlić? The Galaxy signed Jovlić for a $4 million transfer fee, super highly rated, and they just don't start him. His like goals per minutes or goal contribution per minutes ratio is really, really good because he only plays off the bench and mostly when they're chasing a goal. So I would love to see him just play consistently, and I think that he'd be a good fit in the system.
Doyle?
Yeah, no, I mean, nobody really comes to mind. I think if you have Santos and Baggi already, you're probably not looking within the league for another forward. You're more likely going to be going out on the market and trying to find the next Brenner, you know, or the next Tati Castellanos, find the next 19-year-old South American who you think you can mold into the type of player who gets a significant bid from a team in a top five league.
In light of that, I still put a name down. I said Ayo Akinola. We've heard rumors over and over again. I don't think he's a winger. I think he has to play some form of center forward wherever he plays. Obviously, Cincinnati plays with two of them. They create chances. He's never healthy, but it would be a gamble on a player who would fit into your cap pretty easily. Although I don't know if they'd have the under 22 spot open and with Atanga and whatever that means with him on loan and whatnot. Either way, I think there's a lot of trust right now with Cincinnati, right? That's kind of what Tom said of like, of their ability to make the next move, which wasn't true for a while. The question is the window. How big is the window for them to win? And how long does it take for a center forward to get comfortable in MLS? And that's sort of the thing they're going to have to judge against here going forward. But they're going to be the team to watch.
Particularly a young DP, too. Sorry, guys. But like, I mean, it takes any player to adapt, but you need to give a little bit of leeway for, you know, what if the player's 19 or 20.
True, but at the same time, you don't get dropped into many better situations than playing in front of Lucho Acosta alongside, Brandon Vasquez and with two potentially wingbacks who can get up and, you know, serve a final ball. So it's as soft and as sort of well planned out a landing spot as you could look for if you're that type of talent.
We know Alvaro Barrial re-signed. Santiago Arias has been training with the team, Colombian international.
He's still with them.
Yeah, so potential that he could be that right wing back. Matt Miazga got surgery in December. The belief is he'll be back by preseason if he is, or by the kickoff of the season. If he is, that obviously is good. If he's not, that changes things a bit. But I think the big thing with Cincinnati is Nwobodo's there from the start, and he was a game changer as a DP center mid. They didn't get the move done until the season had already kicked off. So they are ahead of where they were at the start of last season when they didn't have Brenner, and they still were playing at a playoff level. So you would assume this team can, as Doyle said, probably keep their head above water without him and the pieces they have on the roster while they take time to figure it out if Brenner is not to play with them. So keep your eyes on that one. We've got a Nottingham Forest connection as well coming back later, but let's jump in with LAFC. Tom, we saw Chicho Arango get the start for the Colombian national team against the U.S. on Saturday. I believe off the back of that, they're just Real Madrid and PSG transfers coming in left and right. What do you know about him, Jose Cifuentes, and sort of this is one of the weirdest rosters right now in MLS of like where they're going to stand in 48 hours.
Yeah, this is one of the teams to watch over the next, you know, like you said, 48 hours or less than that now. We talked kind of all month before that. Like if you asked me on, you know, right after MLS Cup, over under for the day that Jose Cifuentes leaves, I would have set the date at like January 4th, right? Like I thought that, you know, okay, they won the cup. The winter moves is going to happen, though they're talking during the World Cup, I assume. A deal is going to happen and just nothing. And there's been no like real credible links to come out from any potential clubs. Like I keep hearing, you know, I don't have any like specific information, but I keep hearing that there are a lot of talks and that to expect rumors to start coming out without anybody, you know, telling me anything. So there's a lot going on underneath the surface for Jose Cifuentes. I would have expected him to be gone 3.5 weeks ago. I'm still going to hold on to the assumption that they're going to transfer him by the deadline, but man, it's coming down to the wire. And with Chicho Arango, I reported that a Saudi club had a bid rejected for him. There's been interest elsewhere in Europe. There are obviously, you know, the links of a potential trade around the league. If I had to assume right now, I think it's most likely that he leaves abroad, but there is still the possibility of a new contract. And again, you know, we talked about the trades for so long, you have to mention it, but you know, make me guess right now, I'd say a transfer abroad. So again, this is a team to watch over the next day and a half.
How much do you think John Thorington and his staff hates Gustavo Alfaro, who's like, oh, Cifuentes, I'll start the guy on your team who you don't have under contract. Hill's transfer value will go up and Sebas Mendes will leave for nothing. And because that's right. That Tom, to your point, coming out of MLS Cup, the whole combo was he's going to play for Ecuador at the World Cup after winning MLS Cup and having a great season. That's going to be the jumping off point. That seems to be what one of the biggest wrenches in this whole thing was. That never happened.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but the clubs were scouting him like during the season at LAFC. Like I don't think that anything changes in like, oh, he's not a good player anymore because, you know, Sebastian Mendes played ahead of him for three games at the World Cup. So I don't know, but maybe that's just me being naive. But look, you know, this is dragged on for a while. You know, Brighton has been linked with him. I know Gazi were making jokes about that being, you know, too convenient because they're likely to sell his, you know, compatriot Moises Caicedo. They're not the same player. They're not similar profiles, but that's a club that has made signings like a Jose Cifuentes profile going to air quote, like a market that's overlooked, or they're spending, you know, 7 to 15 million on players from South America, or in this case, maybe North America, rather than, you know, 120 million like Chelsea are trying to sign for Enzo Fernandez. So Brighton makes sense, I think, less in stylistically replacing Moises Caicedo and more of their team ethos of this is what the scouting department does.
Yeah, I mean, agree with you.
Benfica makes sense.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, right, like Cifuentes is not, he's not a perfect like for like with Enzo, but Enzo plays as more of a number eight than Moises Caicedo has for Brighton. So and Sifu is like he's a free eight with LAFC. So and it's Benfica's MO as well, is they get a guy for anywhere from 10 to 25 million from one of the, you know, some club in the Americas, and then they sell him for anywhere from 50 to apparently 120 million to an EPL club, you know. So it would be big for MLS to open up a pipeline specifically to Benfica, because Benfica have been, I would say, arguably the best team in the world at being that last stop on the way to the top of the game, right?
I'm pretty sure they've recouped the most money in transfers over the last whatever marker you put. I think it's 6 to 10 years, wherever it is. They have the largest total.
Yeah.
So they've proven that over and over again, whether it's their own players, that next level of players, or they've done a good job actually buying academy players from other countries, putting them in their academy, bringing them through their second team and whatnot, which is what we saw, I believe, for one of the Philadelphia Union Academy players that just got announced. Right, last week, Zambrano.
Yeah, Marcus Zambrano. Right. He signed with Benfica on his 18th
birthday. Which is what he's going to try and do. But Doyle, I agree with you. That would be an incredible setup to be. And then once Cifuentes moves on, your hope would be they look back across and say, who's next?
Or, you know, Cifuentes, you know, if obviously we're creating fan fiction here, folks, so bear that in mind. But like if Cifuentes goes there as the Enzo replacement and does well, then Porto notices and Ajax notices and, you know, other like Lille, who's done a great job, Monaco, you know, these other great teams that end up feeding like straight into the, you know, the top 10 spending teams in the world. They all notice and start, you know, making those purchases. And then beyond that, you get like, okay, well, if Benfica is buying, let's just, you know, near Liverpool, let's just skip the middleman and let's do our shopping in MLS. But we're talking about the type of ecosystem that it takes probably another 5 to 10 years to end up building.
And this is all contingent on Benfica signing Jose signing right now, yeah, right and now. In 5 years, Liverpool are going to be signing.
It's on the clock. It's 40. It's 48 hours. We got to make this happen.
I heard it's like that, the domino memes. They're already at the Aronson household, seeing if they're going to have more kids to just get the early contract in for Paxton and Brendan's soon to be younger sibling. In fairness,
they do have a younger sister.
The Belgian clubs have already moved in this direction, right? Well, which is on that leader line, and that's we've seen Anderlecht make signings. We've seen other clubs.
Oh, I mean, like the Tejan Buchanan right now is like a target for Inter Milan. Like this is what we've all wanted to see from MLS from like since 1996 for me, and I know a little bit later for you guys, but like it's what we've all wanted to see, and it took a long time for the league to get to this point, but we've gone from, you know, just sort of dipping our toes into the global transfer market to, I mean, now, you know, Tom is on Twitter breaking global news saying here, you know, here we go.
No,
we move.
Forgot your own bit.
Yeah, Doyle, you can't forget your own bit. That's brutal.
I'm in preseason shape. Give me a break.
Let's stick with LAFC for a second before we recreate the entire global transfer market in the next 10 minutes. How worried would you be about LAFC? They've traded Latif Blessing. They've lost Sebas Mendez. Let's say Jose Cifuentes leaves. Right now, for three midfield positions, the depth chart is Ilie Sanchez, Kellen Acosta, and Jose Cifuentes. He leaves. How worried are you about this club? That's going to be in CCL.
Because
obviously they got the bye in Leagues Cup, but they still want to compete at that level. And then you have all the other competitions.
They need signings. And they've been able to do it kind of in bunches a little bit. They, at the beginning of the month, the beginning of preseason, they unveiled a new goalkeeper, Aaron Long, Buick, the winger. They had, you know, four signings or whatever. I'm blanking kind of on the last one, but they came up, okay, like we're looking light, and then, and Maldonado, another center back. Bang, here's four new signings. So I'd imagine that they're going to need that again, and like three of them are going to have to be central midfielders. Because as you say, including Cifuentes, they have three senior central midfielders. That's it. And they play a three central midfielder system. So they have a decent amount of work to do, but the front line, and even if Arango goes, is really strong, they probably will need another like natural center forward to add again if Arango does go. But like the front three, center backs, fullbacks, a little bit, like it's really just that central midfield group. And it, you know, again, a couple of signings, and we're going to be looking at this team as, you know, one of the, you know, the best teams in the league again.
You mentioned Aaron Long signing. We have a question here from MLS Aces. Great podcast, so listen to that one. Tom Sweezy, who says, what's going on with Eddie Segura? I feel like nobody's talking about him as a free agent right now, arguably one of the best center backs in MLS when he's healthy. I agree 100% with Tom. If you remember, Eddie Segura basically missed all of last year with a torn ACL, came back, got hurt going into the playoffs, and was sent back onto the IR. And then as the season ended, LAFC basically said, the second injury is worse than we expected. So right now he's not available to play. So hence the cooling of the market on him. It seems like LAFC, Tom, from what we both understand, still talking with him and are interested in bringing him back. But that's where you see Daniil Maldonado and Aaron Long also coming in.
Yeah, John Thornton said it kind of on the record at that press conference. He was asked about Eddie Segura, and he pretty much said that, like, we think it was like hope planning to, like, pretty much like we hope slash expect him to still be at this club. But as you said, Goss monitoring the injury and the talks remain, you know, ongoing or whatever. You know, it seemed him talking about that at a press conference so freely and mm-hmm. so positively for a player who's technically not on a contract should show you how much they expect him to be back again pending this rehab.
Francisco Ginella still out there on loan. Is that the fix? Is that what
Where's Andre Horta?
Yeah, where is Andre Horta? They could sign Ricardo Horta. That would cost a decent amount of money at this point. His brother doing very well at Braga alongside him. So that's LAFC for now. Let's move to some other rumors we're hearing about. Deadline day coming up. Some transfers out of MLS. Tom, there's been a link from Philadelphia Union's Jose Martinez to Europe.
Yeah, Besiktas had a couple bids rejected by the Philadelphia Union or negotiated for star defensive midfielder Jose Martinez, who, you know, I rate as one of the, you know, two or three, if not the best defensive midfielder in the league. It's cool, I guess, to see him being recognized by a club like Besiktas. But the last update I got as of this morning is since that bid a couple days or those bids a couple days ago, talks have cooled and no bid has come in. And the club aren't necessarily expecting another one from Besiktas at the moment. So that's cooled. But again, as we said kind of the beginning of the show, the Turkish deadline day isn't until February 8th. So there's time for that to change. But again, the Union at this moment aren't like waiting on a phone call.
They did bring in Andres Pereira. They do have Leon Flock. So kind of replacements are in place if it was Odata. Forced to happen.
Yeah, it's Odata who's been playing at the six in preseason when Martinez isn't in there. They've been using both Flock and Pereira as shuttlers.
They also signed him for what? $300,000 from Venezuela?
Yeah. Yep.
So they would make X millions of dollars on this move, but this is also a win now team. So you can understand that this one is less interesting to them than a Paxton Aaronson. The other rumor we've heard for 2.5 years is Kai Wagner. And I think everything we're hearing is he's not going to move in this window because the offer is not there.
It's baffling to me. I'll start with like the news before I go to my opinion of that. Yeah, there's just still been no offers there. You know, a link came out last night about Bologna, who are owned by CF Montreal owner Joey Saputo. I was told that no offer came in. And again, it wasn't like a, like we're talking again, it didn't seem to indicate to me that more was coming. I really don't understand this with Kai Wagner. I he's in his prime at 25 years old. He's been consistent in MLS. He's been really good in MLS. He's been, again, the best left back in the league. He's not going to be expensive. He's got 1 year left on his contract. The Union like want to work with him. They're not going to hold him, you know, for some unrealistic price. They understand that his goals are to go back to Europe. They were pleasantly surprised that he was still here through the end of last season. So they were ready to again, be very reasonable on a price and accept that it wasn't going to be the $7 to $10 million that they might have hoped for at some point. So I do not understand that a club, he could help so many teams in Europe's top five leagues. Like, I think he's good enough for Leeds. There was some interest in links there before they ended up signing a different left back. I think he could help 12 of the 18 teams in the Bundesliga. Jonathan Tannewald is pointing this out that Bundesliga teams don't want to spend money on players that they can't then sell for big money to an English club, you know, and that's a real sentiment that the Philadelphia Union have gathered. And I think that notion is the dumbest thing in the world, because what are we doing out here other than trying to win games? Like, transfer business profit, that's all part of the game. But are we buying players to sell them and make a little profit? Or Kai Wagner makes so many teams better in the Bundesliga, and he's not going to be expensive. And just because you can't sell him for $15 million in 2 years is just asinine to me.
I would say for Philly, this is actually still probably a dream scenario, because they made the attempt to sell him. He knows that. He's not upset with them. He's upset the offers didn't come in. So he's going to play hard for you. He's going to be committed. He is the best left back in the league. You continue to keep the best defense in the league together. Now his contract ends. If you lose him for nothing, okay, fine. That's not ideal. But if you win MLS Cup this year, you won't care.
Yeah, and I can say that there have been talks about, hey, why don't you just stay here, right? So nothing that's like advanced or super close, but that conversation has been floated. Like, just make him the best paid left back in the league and say, you can just be a legend here or whatever. You can stay here for however many years. I think that would be pretty attractive. Because again, like you were saying, it's not like they've just rejecting offers and saying, screw you, you can't leave. We need to keep you. Like, he knows that they're open to it and trying. So I think he'd be open to a new contract. Again, like, that's all, that part is speculation, but again, that is in the conversation that maybe he just signs a new contract.
And that's similar to what we just saw with them and Daniel Gazdag. After the season Daniel Gazdag just had, plus what he's done for the Hungarian national team, becoming a regular there, scoring against England, playing very well for them, there was undoubtedly going to be interest in him back in Europe. But rather than capitalize on that, they just signed him to a new long-term deal. So some of these guys in position to, you know, make a move to that we would have thought was a no-brainer, saying, no, actually, you're going to stay in MLS. And it does put the Union in a great position. They have to be considered one of the favorites to win CCL this year if they keep all these guys. And right now, it looks like they're probably going to.
Ali Adnan, DP fullback, Vancouver Whitecaps. That the name was rattling around for a second, and I went to make sure. Can Kai Wagner be the next Ali Adnan? I assume it would go better for Philly, but you never know. There's a lot of ways to build a team. There's no right way. There's no one way. Chicago's trying to figure out a way to be competitive with any roster they can put together. Tom, you reported, I believe, almost 2+ weeks ago about Hwang Yi-jeou, South Korean international, at Olympiacos on loan from Nottingham Forest. His name keeps getting knocked around. How close do you think this could be? Is this part of the Brenner knock-on, or is it not related?
No, not related, because again, he's on loan at Olympiacos, and they're going to cut the loan short so he can leave because he hasn't been playing very much at Olympiacos. But again, Hwang Yi-jeou is a South Korean international. The Fire have made an offer that would be a loan with a purchase option. Offers on the table. There's still discussions. I don't know if anything's, don't believe anything's like imminent, but again, this is somebody, this is their target for a center forward. And he was linked to, he was at Bordeaux last year, and when they got relegated, I believe that he was
to Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota made an offer, and he, I think he ended up going to Nottingham for like $5 million or something. So it has not been a good year for him, as I'm sure, again, Doyle has the numbers of the lack of minutes or playing time. But like in last summer, he was a pretty highly rated potential signing, and now Chicago are trying to get him with a loan with a purchase option.
So since he did his ankle, I guess, pretty badly in autumn of 2021, so October, November, he's played 41 games. He's a center forward. He's scored in 5 of them. And this is a guy who had a pretty good track record as a goal scorer in Ligue 1 in the couple of years before that, and was very good in Japan as well. So it looks, you know, from the eye test and then from the numbers and then from the underlying numbers as well, that he's just not able to find the chances and maybe create the kind of separation that he used to, and the type of separation that good goal scorers use to put the ball in the back of the net. And you see it in his, you know, Tom mentioned the lack of playing time. It's not just lack of goals. Like, he's not getting out there for Olympiacos. He's played, I think, only about 200 minutes in the league. He's played more than that in Europa League. Played 400 minutes in Europa League, no goals, and only 0.9 expected goals over the course of 400 minutes. It was about 4.5 games. That does not scream DP striker to me. That screams, you know, you're welcome to come to training camp and hopefully you can win a roster spot.
Disrespectful.
I mean, 5 goals in 41 games. And it's not like he's playing at the top of the game. Like, he's playing for Olympiacos in Greece, which is like playing for Benfica in Portugal or Ajax in the Netherlands. Like, you're on the biggest team in the country, and you are going to get your chances if you're an attacker. And even in that situation, he has not been able to put the ball in the back of the net. Before that, he played a couple of games in Ligue 2, and he didn't do anything in Ligue 2, which, to be fair, I would understand if there were motivation issues. He would certainly wouldn't be the only one unexpectedly relegated and stopped producing. But it's, look, man, like 3 years ago, we would have been all over this. We would have said, yes, make this signing. He's so clearly, at that point, he was so clearly a DP caliber talent. But injuries change the trajectory of a players' careers all the time. And you look back at that, he missed 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. He had, by eye test, by the numbers, by the underlying numbers, he has not been the same player since then. And now he's 30 years old. And it doesn't seem like he's at the point in his career where he's suddenly going to find the fountain of youth and start being the same guy he was at 25.
I would add two things. One, the 30-year-old part means there's probably not sell on, even if he does do well, which isn't 100% guaranteed, as Doyle has mentioned, which we'll talk about in the next move. Part of some of these moves for MLS is like now you're operating a space where you can get off them. This wouldn't be one of them. The other is Chicago aren't a team. They are a team that we have said needs to upgrade the number nine position. That number nine probably has to do more than just finish chances that are handed to them on a platter. That roster, Joel, I think we kind of agree, probably isn't good enough to say any center forward is fine. Where right. Some other teams in MLS, maybe even in LAFC, right? If they sell Chicho, you're like, whoever comes in there will get goals because the chances are created for you. Chicago, there's probably a little bit more expectation at that center forward spot as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Kasper Schmelko was a totally decent MLS center forward.
16 goals in a season.
For 3 years in Philadelphia. And he came in to Chicago last year, and he struggled to make an impact because I think with the shape of that roster, with the guys who are in there in the engine room and trying to create chances, it's just not – it's not like they're not going to do it for you if you're a center forward. And what worked with Jean Durand, they were able to, like he and Brian Gutierrez, they were able to, they had this connection where understood like, okay, anytime I'm on the ball in midfield, you go because I'm going to play it over the top. I'm going to play it in behind for you. And if you look at Durand's goal scoring in the second half of the season there, like 4 or 5 of them came from that sequence. And like, It doesn't look like Wang is going to provide that, and Schmelko certainly couldn't either.
It's going to be a big year of Gauss Theorem in Chicago. Big year. Jairo Torres, Shaqiri, I don't know. Gaston Jimenez will grandfather him in as a non-DP Gauss Theorem guy. Once you come off the DP contract, now you got to take a year and a half to readjust yourself and find your game once again. And Chicago fans, I know, are hoping for a lot of that and for a better season overall. Let's move to the Red Bulls here. And as I said, some mistakes made, but able to get off of it. Patrick Klamala is off to Israel now. Tom, they are finally done with the Patrick Klamala experience.
Yeah, Patrick Klamala has officially signed for Hapoel Beersheva. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He leaves the New York Red Bulls. There, you know, this has been on the wall. We've talked about this on the show that, you know, even before Red Bulls signed Dante Venzier, that... his time was on. Like last year, he wasn't playing towards or down the stretch. There's a couple games they used Omer Fernandez as a false nine. And then when Elias Manuel got signed, he was a starter. They signed Corey Burke this offseason. So it makes sense that he's leaving a surprise destination. I would have thought that it was going to be somewhere in Central Europe or maybe even a trade within MLS. But Patrick Klamala has departed for Israel.
Are you surprised that the Red Bulls made a move like this in terms of not just giving up? Obviously it hasn't worked, but sort of being willing, it sounds like, to spend the money to get out of it.
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit before that, like you look at Atlanta with Marcy Moreno was a loan, Ake Lobo with Nashville was a loan, and that kind of compromises their cap situation a little bit right now. The Red Bulls were able to get out of this, who again, they have been trying to move on for Patrick Klamala all offseason. So this isn't like there was a bidding war. It's a similar situation to those other clubs, but they were able to do it on a permanent deal so they don't have to worry about the cap ramifications for a player who's no longer at the club. So I think that that's a big win for the Red Bulls in and of itself. There's a sell-on percentage. I think that you just chalk this one up to the game, call it sunk cost, and if you get something back from a sell-on, that's great. If not, not really thinking about it. So I do think that that was really good by the Red Bulls.
So Red Bull fans have been asking for this team to spend money in the attack for a while. They did it, didn't work. Now they've done it again. Uh-huh. Is it a failure? Are you glad to see that they're at least trying? Like, where do you sort of fall across these two moves in this 2-year span?
I think that they've done great work this offseason. This is the exact type of thing that fans have wanted to see from the front office, from ownership, is the willingness to spend their way out of a mistake, which we've seen other big teams do in MLS, and then the willingness to go out and open the checkbook and add another high-level, high-value attacking contributor. And that this makes three off seasons in a row now that the Red Bulls have gone out and spent. Now, the first one was Klimala. That didn't work out great. We're just obviously discussing that. Last offseason, they went out and they got Luquinhas, and he had some good moments but ended up struggling. Still, though, I think we're all kind of, I don't want to say high on Luquinhas, but we're expecting him to be a pretty good player in MLS this year. And now they've gone out and gotten Van Zier, and they did some good work within the league and getting Corey Burke, and they made the Manuel signing permanent. Like, this is, it does feel like the front office has responded a little bit to, a few years of angst from that fan base from 2019 to 2021, when it felt like the Red Bulls as an organization were falling behind the rest of the league in terms of their ambition to put together a team that can compete at or near the top of the league and not just be a clearinghouse. Like, it does, like, this sort of solidifies it. It doesn't guarantee it's going to work. You know, Van Zier looks like a nice player. He doesn't look like an MVP caliber, and Luquinhas might have a second season that is, more like Klimala's and less like the David Goss theorem second season that we're all kind of hoping for. But they have put their money where their mouth is a little bit, and that is a change.
Is Lewis Morgan potential to be in the MVP conversation?
I don't think so.
I mean, he had what, 16 goals last year?
Yeah, but like seven of them were penalties, man. Okay. Like
now we have to frame it as like saying mean things about Lewis Morgan. He had an awesome season. He was great.
MVP? The question is two things. Relax. One, is that player on the roster? And two, does that player even need to be on the roster? Because I would argue they come back with such a strong returning team. Like I said this a few weeks ago, yeah. I think, on this show, that to me, they're right now top four or five team in the East, not even knowing what Van Zier brings because they have so many returning pieces and they haven't sold early on anyone. They didn't pull the Caden Clark again, which was like, oh, we think we have developing strong players. Let's get them out now. And then we never actually get to succeed with them on the field. So they may not need that player. But if you were to assume one exists, he would be the most likely candidate.
No, because again, I think that was his career best. And again, he's a very good player. He played well in the playoff. They lost the playoff game to Cincinnati because Cincinnati had Brandon Vasquez and the Red Bulls didn't have a star. So Van Zier has to be the ceiling raiser. We thought Luquinhas might have been it when he started pretty well after his debut. And then like Doyle said, he really fell off. I think he had like one goal contribution in his last 16 games. They need to have maybe not air quote a star, but they have to have a difference maker. You can't go into playoff games where the other team has, you know, against Cincinnati. Did Cincinnati have the three most talented players? Maybe, like, of the top five? Like, what was it? Like, the Red Bulls had, I guess, a better season in terms of point. They hosted the game, all of that. But Cincinnati had the difference makers. Like, regular season MLS and playoff MLS is different. Red Bulls have done very, very well over the regular season over the last decade. It's been incredible consistency. They keep falling short in the playoffs because they don't have these difference makers. The closest they came was the Sasha Kljestan, Bradley Wright Phillips era. Like, those two were absolute difference makers. They were MVP finalists. Like right now, it has to be Van Zier, or they're going to keep coming up short if they can't have somebody to rely on that's going to be the difference maker, that's going to raise their ceiling.
The funny part about thinking back on that Cincinnati game is it's Aaron Long that gets beat on that play, and he was one where we said, well, he's the one player who would be one of the three best players on the field. So maybe it's the ones you pick as well, and you never know. That's also a hole for them. It seems like they think they have their starters at the back, but there's no depth now because you've lost Aaron Long. They haven't genuinely replaced him except Matthew Nosita, who is the steamship, the warship coming right down the middle of the field. That guy is 6'8", and you know.
I'm so juiced.
I love that size. So that is a lot of excitement there. We, some point around this whole thing, mentioned Atlanta. Do we have any update on the center forward thing with Atlanta? Or are we still in the same holding pattern?
I've been hearing over the past few days, I kept on hearing a lot of positive, like somebody would say that they heard from Japan that Urawa Red Diamonds were told he was signing with Atlanta. I heard that there was a medical. I heard a lot of these like little details, and I couldn't kind of get a final confirmation. And it's coming out today. I believe in Greece, he's a Greek player, a Greek national team player, and it has been coming out in Scotland that Atlanta reached a deal with Celtic on a new structure to make it a purchase rather than a loan with option, and that the personal terms are good. Like, there's a whole lot of smoke saying that this is close. What I do know is that Atlanta need to move players out for the cap to make this, you know, able to have him as a DP, because the original plan was that Marcelino Moreno was going to occupy a DP spot and Giamakis was going to come as a loan, so as a TAM, and then when the purchase option was triggered, he'd become a DP. The league has not allowed that structure when it's pretty clear, okay, this is a DP, but oh, in the first year, we're just not going to call him a DP. I've heard that from other teams that's not a structure that the league are going to be okay with. So Atlanta has moved things around. And again, reports have come out. I don't have anything to confirm that it's done or being finalized yet, but there's a whole lot of smoke that indicates that it's getting close.
It's hard to think of Atlanta getting more players out considering there's like six dudes on their roster right now after last offseason. So that'll be interesting. All right. So let's move on to more concrete things. Albert Elise, Tom, this was one we talked about a bunch last week. I would have been stoked to see La Pantarita back in Major League Soccer. Break my heart right now.
Yeah, so it's been official since I reported this morning that he was finalizing with French club Brest, but he's signed for French club Brest from Bordeaux on a loan with a purchase option. That sounded like a similar deal structure than to what was being reported with LAFC that you know became public and didn't get over the line. I was told that there were talks to the LA Galaxy as well, but Elise is going to stay in France right now with Brest.
All right, well.
That is a bummer for the LA Galaxy, right? Because the issue with the LA Galaxy is they need more productivity from their wings. They need more guys who are in the primes of their careers. Elise checks both those boxes. And the big thing is they can't afford to have variables in their scouting, in the question of whether or not a guy can handle playing in MLS. They've been, their scouting has just not been up to snuff. And Elise was the one attacker out there who, if you look at it, really checked all those, like he's a sure thing in MLS, not an MVP caliber guy like Lewis Morgan. But like, you know, year after year after year for that mostly bad Dynamo team, he was excellent. And you give him, and to Ricky Pudge and to Chicharito, and you're talking 80 goal season. And now for the Galaxy, it's like, okay, I guess we have to somehow scout and find ourselves a winger who can check those boxes, and at least two of them. And it's going to be really, really tough. And we saw it over the past 3 years with the signings they've made on the wings. Kevin Cabral's gone, Samuel Gransier is gone, and boy, I bet they wish Douglas Costa was gone.
This is what you guys do to me. 2 years ago, I tell you Hany Mukhtar is going to be an MVP, and everyone would have laughed on this show. Now it's assumed. Last year, Daniel Gazdag. Then it's laughed at. Now it's assumed. Lewis Morgan had 14 goals and 4 assists in MLS last year without playing with the true center forward in front of him. Played full wing back half the season. Now he comes off a good year. He told me, I think I can do better.
He told me that he was going to be an MVP. Is that the basis of this opinion?
My point is, like, yeah, if he's the leading scorer on his team and he's able to start pushing those numbers, why wouldn't he be a candidate?
Omer Fernandez was the false nine for the Red Bulls for a few games last year. Like, the second leading scorer had 6 goals.
Well, that doesn't matter, though. He had 14 goals and 4 assists, 16 in all comps. That puts him up there with most other. Tati won the Golden Boot with 19 goals.
All right. I don't like that you're painting us as anti-Lewis Morgan.
You
here,
are.
Relax on the MVP conversation. How many people are in an MVP conversation? Like
Lewis
6?
Morgan, Lewis Morgan goal contributions, just MLS regular season play, over under 20.5.
I'll go over.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. That's bold. I'm going to hit the under. Yeah.
Also, Leagues Cup officially counts as MLS comp from here on out on this show.
Absolutely.
No more MLS comps only.
I give you it.
Leagues Cup is part of MLS comps, especially for teams that take it seriously and they work for the biggest championship in the world. Let's close out with one last piece of news. Official now, Colorado Rapids have signed Australian left back Alex Gerschbach, I believe is how that's pronounced. So they've got a left back now, so they don't have to play one of the 18 wingers that they signed or traded for at left back. Congratulations to having a left back to the Colorado Rapids. Let's move to the Club World Cup. For the first time ever, an MLS team will play in the actual Club World Cup. There may have been other fake competitions called stuff, whatever, that MLS teams have played in. I'm putting that out there now, not because I know that, but because I'm waiting for the tweet at 2 a.m. from some Doyle Burner who's like, well, actually, DC United, 97, played in a friendly scrimmage with this team, which was considered the Club World Cup at the time. So the format for this one, it was a draw that already occurred. There's one opening round game that is versus from Auckland City versus Al Ahly. And so that one will happen on Wednesday, February 1st, the day your Apple season pass launches. So you've got a lot of soccer stuff going on in the North American soccer sphere. That game will be on at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 2 and Fox Deportes. The winner of that game will move on to face the Seattle Sounders in the next round. On the other side of the draw, it was already drawn. So Wydad Casablanca, who is technically the host but is also the African Champions League winner, they will face off against the Asian Champions League winner in that. And those four teams in two games will be facing off coming next weekend. The Sounders game will be February 4th, Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS2 and Fox Deportes. They will do so for an opportunity to move on to the semifinals, where I believe they would face off against Real Madrid. So those games would be February 7th and February 8th, and that would be a pretty big deal in Major League Soccer. The final would be February 11th if, you know, Alex Roldan shocks the world. And that's where Seattle moves on to, which this is why we wanted it. Put them on the field, make it real, let's see what happens. It's 90 minutes, maybe plus a little bit, and you get to see what these teams genuinely can do. So for starters, we talked about it a few weeks ago. Seattle will have to start with Al Ahly or Auckland City. We went around on Auckland City for a while. The Al Ahly facts that you need to know: 42-time Egyptian Premier League champions, 10 times CAF Champions League winners. They are the biggest team in Egypt. They are one of the biggest teams in Africa. And as I think we laid out last time, they are arguably one of the biggest teams in the world. When you look at social media following, when you talk about fan base, when you talk about history, it would be a massive matchup if that was it. Auckland City, 10-time Oceania champions, 8-time top flight New Zealand champions. That's how Anders chose to write that, which is awesome. Really glad we did it that way. And they qualified as Oceania Champions League winners. So those would be the two teams that Seattle would face off against, who are in Spain right now, playing in preseason friendlies to get ready for this competition. They just came off a game this weekend. I saw a really pleasant picture of everyone at a long table for dinner. So you know the camaraderie is high right now in the group. Notes here from Anders specifically. João Paulo started, played 45 minutes in the second game as part of the second team. Freddy Montero scored, so that's all Anders is worried about. And the one sort of starting 11 note, which I think could be a starting place for us, is Jackson Reagan got the start with the first team unit. Everyone else is who you'd think, based off form and health and whatever. That would be the one sort of surprise. That was over Xavier Arriaga. And Tom, we talked a little bit coming into the show. There have been connections with him over the last 6 or 7 months with other clubs. I heard in Ecuador, you talked about maybe some other MLS teams looking at him. Is he not a starter for this team, or is it just there's an opportunity for a good offer?
I'm not sure, because like you said, he's playing with the second. Like, these are games that the Sounders are using as test. Like, they need to, they're trying to be ready as best they can as a team in at the beginning or middle of preseason can be for a competition like this. So I think that speaks volumes to where Brian Schmetzer kind of sees his lineup. Apple TV's Taylor Twellman reported last month that if Seattle were to have signed Aaron Long, and they were one of the finalists before he went to LAFC, that they had a deal kind of ready to trade Javier Arriaga to Inter Miami. So, like, it's, as you said, there's been enough smoke to suggest that he's either available or could be. So yeah, I think that's a super interesting one.
Doyle, Seattle are historically a bad team starting their seasons. Like, that's Seattle's thing. We start slow. We come on late. We make the playoffs. We win MLS Cup. They did win CCL, though, out the gates last year. What are you sort of thinking about as they head into this competition and what they're capable of? What are your expectations? Like, what is this experience for Seattle?
Yeah, experience is actually the right word, because I keep thinking about their experience as a group together. And that includes guys like Javier Arriaga, who, you know, he's been there 4 years now. So even if he's maybe not in the best position within the team at this moment, he's been enough of a pro and has enough time playing with these guys where you would, you know, he's going to put on his helmet and he's going to do the job. And that's what's fun about this. From my perspective, is that Seattle's a team that you can rely on when they get a chance to break new ground. These guys will understand the opportunity before them. Everyone from local kids who, you know, have Sounders DNA, like Jordan Morris or Jackson Reagan, to the old war horses, Nico Ladero and Raul Ruiz Diaz. So I expect them to go out and give a good accounting of themselves. I would expect them to beat Auckland City. I don't expect Auckland City to be there. And the Al Ahly game will be kind of a toss-up. Like, that's a good team that spends a lot of money and has been there a million times before. It's fun to see it now on a new stage. And if there's any team in this league that has earned it, it is this group of Seattle Sounders, for sure.
So your expectations are most likely a toss-up in the quarterfinals, and then anything from there is gravy?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't expect them to beat Real Madrid. I would be pleasantly surprised if they only lost by 3 goals to Real Madrid. But, you know, pleasant surprises can happen.
If they beat Real Madrid, even in Atlanta, Garth Agüero is going to be yelling about immortality and the Avengers and everything.
He would be right to.
How about this? If Seattle gets to that game against Real Madrid and they lose by 3 goals or less, Doyle has to film himself running a 40-yard dash.
Whoa.
Wow. All right.
Let's go!
I didn't say I would release the film. You just said that I would film it.
You got to release. No,
you can't go back and
amend. Take him off the show.
The agreement now, Thomas. Come on, man.
What are you going to do? Just play it so you can watch your own form?
You know it'll hit the group chat.
So that's all that matters.
Terrell actually has a team that works on his running gait, his form, velocity, you know, all of that. Because when he comes off the gun,
that's why he's bald. The aerodynamics.
Yeah, well, Doyle's aerodynamic. Yeah, everyone knows that. The Usain Bolt of the show is what a lot of people have called Doyle over the last 7 seconds, starting with me. All right, so that's Club World Cup. This is going to be epic. It's kind of weird that it's actually happening. It's kind of my process around the whole thing. It's one of those things you always talked about. And as you said, Doyle, like, if they step on the field against Al Ahly, that's just awesome. Like, yeah. That's one of those big clubs that you hear about, you talk about. You know, I watch them in the African competitions, and, you know, they have a great list of alumni at this point. When you talk about Mo Salah and some of the best players in the world, it would be really cool to see that game go down, and it would be really cool to see them on the field against Real Madrid. Hopefully do better than some of the Liga MX teams. Liga MX has been hit or miss in Club World Cup. There's been some big disappointments from teams like those Monterrey squads that beat RSL.
Tigres a couple of years ago.
Yeah, though. Where it felt like they were kind of poised and they couldn't get past that quarterfinal. And then Tigres made it to the final 2 years ago, I believe, at this point. And that's obviously Gignac's team. And that was Tigres' first opportunity in the competition because they had lacked continental success up until that point. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Seattle puts together. Obviously, it's an experienced squad, as Doyle said, and it's a settled team. There aren't really question marks when guys are healthy. The question is, who is Jao Paulo right now? What's his level? And then you look at some of the other guys who have been off for a little while, and you see where they're at coming back into this season. Let's jump in with national team stuff to finish. USMNT January camp, 0-0 draw against Colombia to follow up the 2-1 loss to Serbia. Each of you, give me your big takeaway or player or one big thought you've had coming out of this window.
I guess I'll go first. I wrote a react after the first game, after the Serbia game, saying like, I was really happy with what I saw because we kept the system from the Berhalter was using, which means we're keeping continuity, and we'll have that from 22 to 26, and we'll add layers on top of it. And the most important thing to me is to keep that continuity, because that's how great national teams stay great. And then Ernie Stewart left less than 24 hours later, and all of that immediately became not just irrelevant, but wrong, because it looks like we're not going to be keeping any sort of continuity cycle over cycle, which I think sort of undercuts a lot of the, like, Anthony Hudson's not going to be the long-term coach of the national team, man. Like, undercuts a lot of the takeaways that you could otherwise have from this camp, which just boils it down to, okay, who played pretty well? And I thought the guys who stood out were DeJuan Jones, Brandon Vasquez. Zendejas played well, though I would argue within the scope of where he is in his season versus where the other guys are, I didn't think he stood out that much, but certainly I would be happy to see him again in March for the Nations League. And I thought John Tolkien did okay. Those were probably the four from a national team perspective. And then from an MLS perspective, you know, if you're a Quakes fan, you're probably pretty stoked on Cade Cowell. And if you're a Galaxy fan, you're probably pretty stoked on Jalen Neal. Watching those guys get out there and mostly acquit themselves very well. That was fun. But other than that, like, it was not the most significant camp in the world, which is to be expected given where we are in the cycle.
Tom?
Yeah, I mean, Doyle just named 19 players, so I'm not sure who's left. But for me, I did enjoy the couple of the youngsters. Like, we'll start with Cowell because I thought he was really, really, lively. You know, I'm trying to stay away from overreacting to a preseason game and what it meant from the other teams. But he looked to have a different edge. And if that's the player that comes back to Quakes camp, if that's a player that starts the MLS season and then goes to the U20 World Cup, like, this is more like the prospect that we thought we were getting last year. And again, that was his age 18 season or whatever. Like, this is still a young kid. No matter, he looks like he's 26. This is still a young kid. So I'm still really high on him. And I thought it was great to see him play that way. It's the first time we've seen him since October or whatever, because of the Quake season ending when it did. And the other player for me was Paxton Aaronson. He gave the ball away too cheaply a little bit. I'll get that out of the way, but I don't know. He was kind of like refreshingly unique for a typical American midfielder. Like, Doyle, I remember I've read before, I even, when I was still in college reading your stuff, like, you were talking about how the U.S. didn't produce any players who do that little body feint before they get the ball. They're already kind of trying to be deceitful to defenders before they even touch the ball. And I think that he was doing that all game long. You could tell that he needs to, continue growing into his body, which he will, because he's still, just turning 19 and was already small for his age group anyway. But like, he kept getting back into the fight. Like, he never shied away. And no matter how many times he hit the floor, whether it was a foul or not a foul, like, he was getting in dudes' faces. Like, it seemed like he was down for the fight. And that's the mentality that you kind of want to see. And again, I think that there's so much skill there and enough there to, put those two together that I was impressed by Paxton Aaronson's debut.
And I'll say on top of it, he found the ball a ton. Yeah, and I like scared to see that in any central midfielder. I have a tough time trusting central midfielders who don't find enough of the game. He found it a ton, which is impressive considering that he's not a central midfielder. Like, he is not, to me, in any way, shape, or form a number eight. I think he's an attacker. Yeah. And I think for the U20s, and I think hopefully in the future years for Eintracht Frankfurt, we will see him in the attack. So, yeah, I mean, I'm more impressed than unimpressed by what Paxton Aaronson did, in spite of like repeated giveaways and just not having the right ideas in terms of how to set tempo and make the system work. Like, I don't really care about that. I wouldn't have expected that from him in that position. I think he ended up showing a lot of the stuff that makes him a good prospect. But just in terms of from a national team point of view, like, he's still very much a prospect. And like, we talk about him for U20 reasons and maybe for Olympic reasons. Like, we should not see him with a full national team camp again you know, probably until 2024 at the earliest.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's a little reckless to kind of rule that right now, given, you know, we always talk about development isn't linear. I think that we, you know, definitely not in March, obviously. I think you reassess after the U-20 World Cup, and then you kind of take where the program is going from there. You hope by the Gold Cup there's a full-time sporting director and a full-time manager in place. I'm not suggesting that he should be going to the Gold Cup or not, but I think that this is a conversation that we should reassess after the U-20 World Cup.
So we've changed the timeline a bit with the official news coming out since our last show that Copa America 2024 will be in the U.S. There will be six CONCACAF teams as a part of that competition. And the six CONCACAF teams will qualify through CONCACAF Nations League play. So the U.S. not guaranteed a spot as a host. One, we didn't even know this was a possibility. So this is, I think on that front, I think all of us are excited about that. Am I wrong there?
You are not wrong.
Okay. I'm just all of a sudden realized maybe I can't assume what you guys think that having Copa America in the U.S. would be great.
Thank you for asking, David. Yeah. Gosh, I appreciate that.
Listen, I like to be thoughtful, but we have no idea if the U.S. will be in it because they do have to actually qualify for it. Doyle, does that change your thought process? Because you said sort of the timeline where this camp falls. I think 2 weeks ago that was different than what it is now. Does it change your thought process in what you want to see over the next few camps? Who should be part of the group? How the group should be handled?
Well, do we know exactly that the March Nations League games are going? Yeah. So like typically of CONCACAF, nothing is as clear as it should be. But I always expected that would be a combination of A-team guys who are healthy and a couple of new players like a DeJuan Jones, a John Tolkien, a Brandon Vasquez, you know, bring Georgie, bring Taylor Booth has had, you know, a very nice season for Utrecht. Like bring guys like that and maybe even Tanner Tessman if you want to take a look at D-mids down the line. Like, I thought that's what it would be. The performances of the guys I named in this camp, Vasquez, Jones, Tolkien, I'll say it again, maybe Julian Gressel as well as a specialist for if you're chasing a game and you know you're going to be bending in a million crosses, like he should obviously be there as well. It just confirmed, I think, what I already thought. But given that these Nation League games now might actually
specifically state it says qualifying via the 2023-24 CONCACAF Nations League.
Okay. Is this not the 2023 CONCACAF Nations League? Are we not in 2023?
Oh, I thought this was, but they started playing these games before the World Cup, right?
I don't know, man.
Didn't we play Grenada?
We did.
Austin?
In June.
Yeah. I think that was part of this Nations League.
Even though that took place in 2022.
I think it was 2022-2023 Nations League. This is 2023-2024 Nations League.
This is ridiculous. Like, CONCACAF needs to clean it up, man.
I mean, sort of. An NBA season spans 2 years. It is what it is, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I want to see that combo of A-team guys who are healthy and who are not overloaded with their clubs with this group of players who are coming up and starting, you know, who are earning it with their play at the domestic clubs and a little bit with this camp.
Well, I just want to say, no matter what happens, I'm really glad that Anders has fallen asleep at the wheel as producer on this whole Nations League thing and has had zero input from the chat, which is great. I don't know. On Wikipedia, it says 2022-2023 Nations League. So that's the most I could find on the spot right now. Let's move to the mailbag and let's make up some trades. We've got They Call Me Nels, who says, speak some more intra-league trades into existence. Maybe have everyone pick a win-win trade they propose if they were a GM for a day.
Dejan Jovlich, I know we already talked about it, so I'll give you another one. But like the more and more that we threw that out as a half joke, it's like, oh man, I would love to see that happen. I guess something that's more realistic would
but
be
where?
Well,
oh, the just the Cincy.
To Cincy. Okay. Yeah. So sticking on that theme though, like Ayo Akinola, what would he look like in a two-forward formation? Could he kind of realize his potential, stay fit, and be a little bit more consistent to Cincinnati? I think that's a more realistic one than Jovlich.
Okay. Doyle?
I'm just like, isn't Toronto a better spot for Ayo Akinola than Cincinnati is at this point? Because the only other center forward for Toronto. The only other center forwards for Toronto are either Kids or Jimenez, who was
They signed Diamande.
Oh, that's right. Jeez, I forgot about it. But like, it's not like he's the most reliable.
It's Bob's guy.
Either. It's
this is the second time. This is the third time he's had him on his team. That feels telling.
But he's 32. He's injury prone. I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, because I think Io would be a good fit, but I would struggle to see Cincy pulling that one off. Frankie Amaya to LAFC.
Love
that. We were talking earlier in the show. LAFC need central midfielders. They only have three as of this taping, maybe four, because Cristomo, I believe they signed him, and he's more of a central midfielder than a winger. But like Frankie Amaya, probably not. It seems like he's probably not a starter for the Red Bulls. They have Caceres and Daniel Edelman, Peter Stroud, who we've talked about on this show. Bento Estrella is coming to the point where he might be old enough to start getting minutes. And I forgot to mention Drew Yearwood. So Frankie Amaya, send him home to Los Angeles, recoup what you can in terms of, allocation cash. And from LA's perspective, you get younger at that spot and you get a kid who can play as an eight or a six. And I think that flexibility helps them a lot.
I like that one. That's a good one. I have two in different ranges. One is Sebastian Blanco to LA Galaxy.
Wow.
Evander comes in. So you've got Eric Williamson and Diego Chara, Evander, Santiago Moreno, Jimmy Chara, and then 16 center forwards. So Blanco's not a starter.
And another one coming.
Right. Blanco's not a starter. That doesn't include Dairon Asprilla in what I just talked about, or Christian Paredes, who's still there. So I think there's space where they're no longer reliant on him. The Galaxy, as Doyle mentioned, have struggled bringing players in from outside of MLS to be productive. I think no matter what. So I had that one. Then on the flip side, stealing sort of Doyle's Red Bull depth, was Omer Fernandez to the LA Galaxy. Either way, a guy who could play one of those wide spots, give you some goals, no Major League Soccer to an extent while they go out and find whatever DP or non-DP they were going to bring in. So those were the two that popped in my head because I didn't do this before the show. So I'm making them up on the fly.
Can I just raise a point here? We're talking about the Galaxy and my Albert Elise rant about them earlier was predicated on them playing a 4-2-3-1, which we all know is what Greg Vanney has wanted to aim at for a few years now. But the fact that they haven't gone out and signed any new wingers, the fact that they did get rid of two of their wingers this offseason, and the fact that they do still have both Jovalic and Chicharito, the fact that they did add center back depth, it seems like they're in better position now to play the 3-5-2 than they were last year. And when we all thought last year that they should have been playing a 3-5-2 all along. The one time they did it,
they played Cabral up top instead of Jovalic. So, like Vanny's been on the record so many times, both with his actions and his literal words, that he does not see Jovalic and Chicharito as a fit together. I hope that that's changed. I hope that's wrong. Looking at the roster, you said these are all coherent points, but every single time we've hoped this, it hasn't happened.
I mean, it's just striking that they're like they had three or four true wingers at this time last year, and they couldn't play the 4-2-3-1 effectively. And now they're down to like half a real winger on their roster at this point. And we're still all acting like they're definitely going to play a 3-5-2. So maybe it's just been sitting or, we're acting like they're not going to play a 3-5-2, that they are still going to play a 4-2-3-1. Like maybe it's just been sitting there right in front of our face all preseason. And we just hadn't picked up on it yet.
We've been hurt before, Doyle. I think that's what we're doing.
I would love if we could create the technology to clone the Galaxy and have the 4-3-3 Galaxy face off against the 3-5-2 Galaxy 10 times just to prove to Greg Vanney whether or not it works, but it feels like it won't. Okay, any more trades or we feel good? You guys are good?
Feel good.
Can I just, in looking through my list, I hope Tavon Gray gets to play center back at some point this year. I would just like to see it in a Major League Soccer.
In a three.
I don't care. I don't think it will be a three. It didn't seem like that will work for them, and I don't think it fits their talent. Well, quite honestly, I don't know what their talent is.
Oh, I thought you were proposing a trade.
No. I want Tavon Gray to play center back for NYCFC.
NYCFC, okay.
I don't think NYCFC is in a position to trade Tavon Gray right now because they don't have anyone else on their team. So that would just leave them even thinner. Let's close out with this one. We've got a bunch of Minnesota United fans basically just asking, should they be worried? Is either of you worried about Minnesota United right now on January 30th of 2023, the back end of this CONCACAF Nations League cycle?
I am. I was pretty bullish on Minnesota United this time last year. I'm less bullish, but not precisely worried. Okay. If Reynoso doesn't come back, then yeah, you smash all those panic buttons, folks.
Give me an exact amount of bullish or lack thereof.
Last year, I was pretty sure they were a top four team in the West.
So like 85% bullish, 90% bullish.
I don't know. I don't.
Just trying to get the conversion right here. What is bullish to GAM?
I think
I'm not selling this bit.
This is hour and 20 minute Doyle as Anders is like giving us the hook. Please stop talking if this is what you're going to say.
I have one last thing to add then, which will make you all even more miserable. Is Kwadwo Opoku under 22 player? I don't believe he is, right?
Oh my goodness.
I'm pretty sure. My point is the center forward they signed, I think, is the only one, which means that LAFC is allowed to have a senior DP, Rodolfo Pizarro. Inter Miami to LAFC, central mid, covers ground, plays a ton of minutes. Him and Carlos Vela know each other. I love that trade right now. That is what I would call a win-win. Maybe, if you include me, a win-win-win, which is what we were all looking for. All right, that's it for us for the rest of this show. Thank you, all of you out there, for listening. Hopefully, Andrew Wiebe somehow finds a way to get better at some point over the course of this season. If not, we'll just turn him into a straw man, and we'll just start throwing random arguments at him and from him as we go throughout the show. Thank you to both you, Matt, and Tom. Thank you to Anders and everything he does. And thank you to everyone out there for listening. We'll talk to you again next show. We'll be right back.